Welcome to a continuation of the discourses upon the existence and attributes of God by Stephen Charnock, Volume 2. This is Part 2. This Reformation audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalogue containing classic and contemporary Puritan and Reformed books, CDs and much more, at great discounts, are on the web at www.swrb.com. Also, please consider, pray and act upon the important truths found in the following quotation by Charles Spurgeon. As the Apostle says to Timothy, so also he says to everyone, give yourselves to reading. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read. Renounce as much as you will all like literature, but study as much as possible sound theological works, especially the Puritanic writers and expositions of the Bible. The best way for you to spend your leisure is to be either reading or praying. And now to SWRB's reading of the History of Redemption, which we hope you find to be a great blessing, and which we pray draws you nearer to the Lord Jesus Christ. For he is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but by him. John 14, verse 6. 7. Hence it follows that this power is infinite. In Ephesians 1, verse 19, what is the exceeding greatness of his power, etc., according to the working of his mighty power. God were not omnipotent unless his power were infinite, for a finite power is a limited power, and a limited power cannot affect everything that is possible. Nothing can be too difficult for the divine power to affect. He hath a fullness of power, an exceeding strength, above all human capacities. It is a mighty power, Ephesians 1, verse 19, able to do above all that we can ask or think, Ephesians 3, verse 20. That which he acts is above the power of any creature to act. Infinite power consists in the bringing things forth from nothing. No creature can imitate God in this prerogative of power. Man, indeed, can carve various forms and erect various pieces of art, but from pre-existent matter, every artifice hath the matter brought to his hand. He only brings it forth in a new figure. Chemists separate one thing from another, but create nothing, but sever those things which were before compacted and cradled together. But when God speaks a powerful word, nothing begins to be something. Things stand forth from the womb of nothing, and obey his mighty command, and take what forms he is pleased to give them. The creating one thing, though never so small and minute as the least fly, cannot be but by an infinite power. Much less can the producing of such variety we see in the world. His power is infinite. In regard, it cannot be resisted by anything that he hath made, nor can it be confined by anything he can will to make. His greatness is unsearchable in Psalm 145, verse 3. It is a greatness not of quantity, but of quality. The greatness of his power hath no end. It is a vanity to imagine any limits can be affixed to it, or that any creature can say, hitherto it can go, and no further. It is above all conception, all inquisition of any created understanding. No creature ever have, nor ever can have, the strength of wit and understanding to conceive the extent of his power, and how magnificently he can work. First, his essence is infinite. As a finite subject, there is a finite virtue. So in an infinite subject, there must be an infinite virtue. Where the essence is limited, the power is so. Where the essence is unlimited, the power knows no end. Among creatures, the more excellency of being and form anything hath, the more activity, vigour, and power it hath, to work according to its nature. The sun hath a mighty power to warm, enlighten, and fructify, above what the stars have, because it hath a vaster body, more intense degrees of light, heat, and vigour. Now, if you conceive the sun made much greater than it is, it would proportionally have greater degrees of power to heat and enlighten than it hath now. And were it possible to have an infinite heat and light, it would infinitely heat and enlighten other things, for everything is able to act according to the measures of its being. Therefore, since the essence of God is unquestionably infinite, his power of acting must so be so also. His power, as was said before, is one and the same thing with his essence. And though the knowledge of God extends to more objects than his power, because he knows all evils of sin, which because of his holiness he cannot commit, yet it is as infinite as his knowledge, because it is as much one with his essence as his knowledge and wisdom is. For as the wisdom or knowledge of God is nothing but the essence of God, knowing, so the power of God is nothing but the essence of God, able. The objects of divine power are innumerable. The objects of divine power are not essentially infinite, and therefore we must not measure the infiniteness of divine power by an ability to make an infinite being, because there is an incapacity in any created thing to be infinite. For to be a creature and to be infinite, to be infinite and yet made, is a contradiction. To be infinite and to be God is one and the same thing. Nothing can be infinite but God. Nothing but God is infinite. Now the power of God is infinite, because it can produce infinite effects or innumerable things, such as surpass the arithmetic of a creature, nor yet doth the infinite consist simply in producing innumerable effects, for that a finite cause can produce. Fire can, by its finite and limited heat, burn numberless combustible things and parcels, and the understanding of man hath an infinite number of thoughts and acts of intellection, and thoughts different from one another. Who can number the imaginations of his fancy and thoughts of his mind the space of 1 month or year, much less of 40 or 100 years? Yet all these thoughts are about things that are in being, or have a foundation in things that are in being. But the infiniteness of God's power consists in an ability to produce infinite effects, formally distinct and diverse from one another, such as never had being, such as the mind of man cannot conceive, able to do above what we can think, Ephesians 3, verse 20. And whatsoever God hath made, or is able to make, he is able to make in an infinite number, by calling them to stand forth from nothing, to produce innumerable effects of distinct natures. And for so distant a term as nothing, is an argument of infinite power. Now that the objects of divine power are innumerable, appears because God can do infinitely more than he hath done or will do. Nothing that God hath done can enfeeble or dull his power. There still resides in him an ability beyond all the settled contrivances of his understanding and resolves of his will, which no effects which he hath wrought can drain and put to a stand, as he can raise stones to children to Abraham, in Matthew 3, verse 9. So with the same mighty word, whereby he made one world, he can make infinite numbers of worlds to be the monuments of his glory. After the prophet Jeremiah, in chapter 32:17, had spoke of God's power in creation, he adds, "And there is nothing too hard for thee. For one world that he hath made, He can create millions. And one star which he had beautified the heavens with, he could have garnished it with 1,000 and multiplied if he had pleased every one of those into millions. For he can call things that are not. Romans 4, verse 17. Not some things, but all things possible. The barren womb of nothing can no more resist his power now to reduce a world from it than it could at first. No doubt, but from one angel which he hath made, he could make many worlds of angels. He that made one with so much ease, as by a word, cannot want power to make any more till he wants a word. The word that was not too weak to make one cannot be too weak to make multitudes. If from one man he hath, in a way of nature, multiplied so many in all ages of the world, and covered with them the whole face of the earth, he could, in a supernatural way, by one word, multiply as many more. It is the breath of the Almighty that gives life, in Job 33, verse 4. He can create infinite species and kinds of creatures more than he hath created, more variety of forms. For since there is no searching of his greatness, there is no conceiving the numberless possible effects of his power. The understanding of man can conceive numberless things possible to be, more than have been or shall be. And shall we imagine that a finite understanding of a creature hath a greater omnipotency to conceive things possible than God hath to produce these things possible? When the understanding of man is tired in his conceptions, it must still be concluded that the power of God extends not only to what can be conceived, but infinitely beyond the measure of a finite faculty. Touching the Almighty, we cannot find him out. He is excellent in power and in judgment. Job 36, verse 23. For the understanding of man in his conceptions of more kinds of creatures is limited to those creatures which are. It cannot, in its own imagination, conceive anything but what hath some foundation in and from something already in being. It may frame a new kind of creature made up of a lion, a horse, an ox, but all those parts whereof its conception is made have distinct beings in the world, though not in that composition, as his mind mixes and joins them. But no question that God can create creatures that have no resemblance with any kind of creatures yet in being. It is certain that if God only knows those things which he hath done and will do, and not all things possible to be done by him, his knowledge were finite. So if he could do no more than what he had done, his power would be finite. 1. Creatures have a power to act about more objects than they do. The understanding of man can frame from one principle of truth many conclusions and inferences more than it does. Why cannot then the power of God frame from the one first matter an infinite number of creatures more than have been created? The almightiness of God in producing real effects is not inferior to the understanding of man in drawing out real truths. An artificer that makes a watch, supposing his life and health, can make many more of a different form and motion. And a limner can draw many drafts and frame many pictures with a new variety of colours according to the richness of his fancy. If these can do so, that require a pre-existent matter framed to their hands, God can do much more who can raise beautiful structures from nothing. As long as man have matter, they can diversify the matter and make new figures from it. So long as there is nothing, God can produce out of nothing whatsoever he pleases. We see the same in inanimate creatures. A spark of fire hath a vast power in it. It will kindle other things, increase and enlarge itself. Nothing can be exempt from the active force of it. It will alter by consuming or refining whatever you offer to it. It will reach all and views none, and by the efficacious power of it, all those new figures which we see in metals and are brought forward, when you have exposed it, a multitude of things, still add more. It will exert the same strength, yea, the bigger is increased rather than diminished. The more it catcheth, the more fiercely, or decrease of its strength, as long as you can conceive its duration and continuance. And this must be but a weak shadow of that infinite power which is in God. Take another instance, in the sun. It hath power every year to produce flowers and plants in the earth, and is able to produce them now as it was at the first lighting it and rearing it in that sphere wherein it moves. And if there were no kind of flowers and plants now created, the sun had a power residing in it, ever since its first creation, to afford the same warmth to them for the nourishing and bringing them forth. Whatsoever you can conceive the sun to be able to do in regard of plants, that can God do in regard of worlds. Produce more worlds than the sun doth plants every year, without weariness, without languishment. The sun is able to influence more things than it doth, and produce numberless effects, but it doth not do so much as is able to do, because it wants matter to work upon. God, therefore, who wants no matter, can do much more than he doth. He can either act by second causes, if there were none, and make more second causes, if he were pleased. 2. God is the most free agent. Every free agent can do more than he will do. Man, being a free creature, can do more than ordinarily he doth will to do. God is most free, as being the spring of liberty in other creatures. He acts not by a necessity of nature, as the waves of the sea, or the motions of the wind, and therefore is not determined to those things which he hath already called forth into the world. If God be infinitely wise in contrivance, he could contrive more than he hath, and therefore can effect more than he hath effected. He doth not act to the extent of his power upon all occasions. It is according to his will that he works, Ephesians 1. It is not according to his work that he wills. His work is an evidence of his will, but not the rule of his will. His power is not the rule of his will, but his will is the disposer of his power, according to the light of his infinite wisdom and other attributes that directs his will. And therefore his power is not to be measured by his actual will. No doubt that he could in a moment have produced that world which he took 6 days' time to frame. He could have drowned the old world at once, without prolonging the time till the revolution of 40 days. He was not limited to such a term of time by any weakness, but by the determination of his own will. God does not the 100,000th part of what he is able to do, but what is convenient to do according to the end which he hath proposed to himself. Jesus Christ, this man, could have asked legions of angels. And God, as a sovereign, could have sent them in Matthew 26, verse 53. God could raise the dead every day if he pleased, but he doth not. He could heal every diseased person in a moment, but he doth not. As God can will more than he doth actually will, so he can do more than he hath actually done. He can do whatsoever he can will. He can will more worlds, and therefore can create more worlds. If God hath not ability to do more than he will do, he then can do more than what he actually hath done. And then it will follow that he is not a free, but a natural and necessary agent, which cannot be supposed of God. 2. This power is infinite in regard of action. As he can produce numberless objects above what he hath produced, so he can produce them more magnificently than he hath made them. As he never works to the extent of his power in regard of things so neither in regard of the manner of acting, for he never acts so, but he could act in a higher and perfecter manner. 1. His power is infinite. In regard of the independency of action, he wants no instrument to act. When there was nothing but God, there was no cause of action but God. When there was nothing in being but God, there could be no instrumental cause of the being of anything. God can perfect his action without dependence on anything, and be simply independent is to be simply infinite. In this respect, it is a power incommunicable to any creature, though you conceive a creature in higher degrees of perfection than it is. A creature cannot cease to be dependent, but it must cease to be a creature. To be a creature and independent are terms repugnant to one another. But the infiniteness of divine power consists in an ability to give high degrees of perfection to everything which he hath made. As his power is infinite extensive in regard of the multitude of objects he can bring into being, so it is infinite intensive in regard to the manner of operation and the endowments he can bestow upon them. Some things, indeed, God does so perfect that high degrees of perfection cannot be imagined to be added to them, as the humanity of Christ cannot be united more gloriously than to the person of the Son of God. A greater degree of perfection cannot be conferred upon it. Nor can the souls of the blessed have a more nobler object of vision and fruition than God himself, the infinite being. No higher than the enjoyment of himself can be conferred upon a creature. This is not want of power. He cannot be greater because he is greatest, nor better because he is best. Nothing can be more than infinite. As to the things which God hath made in the world, he could have given them other manner of being than they have. Human understanding may improve a thought or a conclusion, strengthen it with more and more force of reason, and adorn it with richer and richer elegancy of language. Why then may not the divine providence produce a world more perfect and excellent than this? He that makes a plain vessel can embellish it more, engrave more figures upon it, according to the capacity of the subject. And cannot God do so much more with his works? Could not God have made this world of a larger quantity, and the sun of a greater bulk and proportional strength, to influence once a bigger world, so that this world would have been another than that God might have made, as a ball or a mount, his sun as a star to another star than he might have kindled? He could have made every star a sun, every spire grass a star, every grain of dust a flower, every soul an angel. And though the angels be perfect creatures, and inexpressibly more glorious than a visible creature, yet who can imagine God so confined that he cannot create a more excellent kind, and endow those which he hath made with excellency of a higher rank he invested them with at the first moment of their creation? Without question, God might have given the mere creatures more excellent endowments, put them into another order of nature for their own good, and more diffusive usefulness in the world. What it is made of by the prophet Malachi 2:15 in another case may be used in this. Yet had he a residue of spirit. The capacity of every creature might have been enlarged by God, for no work of his in the world doth equal his power, as nothing that he hath framed doth equal his wisdom. The same matter which is the matter of the body of a beast is the matter of a plant and flower. It is the matter of the body of a man, and so is capable of a higher form and higher perfections than God hath been pleased to bestow upon it. And he had power to bestow that perfection on one part of matter, which he denied to it, and bestowed on another part. If God cannot make things in a greater perfection, there must be some limitation of him. He cannot be limited by another, because nothing is superior to God. If limited by himself, that limitation is not from want of power, but want of will. He can, by his own power, raise stones to be the children of Abraham, Matthew 3:9. He could alter the nature of the stones, form them into human bodies, dignify them with rational souls, inspire those souls with such graces that may render them the children of Abraham. But for the more fully understanding the nature of his power, we may observe, 1, that though God can make everything with a higher degree of perfection, yet still with a limit within the limits of a finite being. No creature can be made infinite, because no creature can be made God. No creature can be so improved as to equal the goodness and perfection of God, yet there is no creature that we may conceive a possibility of its being made perfect in that rank of creature than it is, as we may imagine a flower or plant to have greater beauty and richer qualities imparted to it by divine power, without rearing it so high as to the dignity of a rational and sensitive creature. Whatsoever perfections may be added by God to a creature are still finite perfections, and a multitude of finite excellencies can never amount to the value and honour of infinite, as if you add one number to another as high as you can, as much as a large piece of paper can contain, you can never make the numbers really infinite, though they may be infinite in regard to the inability of human understanding to count them. The finite condition of a creature suffers it not to be capable of an infinite perfection. God is so great, so excellent, that it is his perfection not to have it any equal. The defect is in the creature, which can't be elevated to such a pitch, as you can never make a gallon measure to hold the quantity of a butt, or a butt the quantity of a river, or a river the fullness of the sea. 2. Though God hath a power to furnish every creature with greater and nobler perfections than he hath bestowed upon it, yet he hath framed all things in the perfectest manner and most convenient to the end for which he intended them. Everything is endowed with the best nature and quality suitable to God's end in creation, though not in the best manner for itself. In regard of the universal end, there cannot be a better, for God himself is the end of all things, who is the supreme goodness. Nothing can be better than God. Who could not be God if he were not superlative blessed? And he hath ordered all things for the declaration of his goodness or justice, according to the behaviours of his creatures. Man does not consider what strength or power he can put forth in the means he uses to attain such an end, but the suitableness of them to his main design, and so fits and marshals them to his grand purpose. Had God only created things that are most excellent, he had created only angels and men, how then would his wisdom have been conspicuous in other works in the subordination and subserviency of them to one another? God therefore determined his power by his wisdom. And though his absolute power could have made every creature better, yet his ordinate power, which in every step was regulated by his wisdom, made everything best for his designed intention. The musician hath a power to wind up a string on a lute to a higher
a more perfect note in itself. But in wisdom he will not do it, because the intended melody would be disturbed thereby if it were not suited to the other strings on the instrument. A discord would mar and taint the harmony which the lutenist designed. God in creation observed the proportions of nature. He can make a spider as strong as a lion, but according to the order of nature which he has settled, it is not convenient that a creature of so small a compass should be as strong as one of a greater bulk. The absolute power of God could have prepared a body for Christ as glorious as that he had after his resurrection. But that had not been agreeable to the end designed in his humiliation. And therefore God acted more perfectly by his ordinate power in giving him a body that wore the livery of our infirmaries. God's power is always regulated by his wisdom and will. And though it produces not what is most perfect in itself, yet what is most perfect and decent in relation to the end he fixed. And so in his providence, though he could rack the whole frame of nature to bring about his ends in a more miraculous way, an astonishment to mortals, yet his power is usually and ordinarily confined by his will to act in concurrence with the nature of the creatures and direct them according to the laws of their being, to such ends which he aims at in their conduct, without violencing their nature. 3. Though God hath an absolute power to make more worlds, and infinite numbers of other creatures, and to render every creature a higher mark of his power, yet in regard of his decree, to the contrary, he cannot do it. He hath a physical power, but after his resolve to the contrary, not a moral power. The exercise of his power is subordinate to his decree, but not the essence of his power. The decree of God takes not away any power from God, because the power of God is in his own essence and incapable of change, and is as great physically and essentially after his decree as it was before. Only his will hath put in a bar to the demonstration of all that power which he is able to exercise. As a prince that can raise 100,000 men for an invasion raises only 20 or 30,000, he here, by his order, limits his power, but doth not divest himself of his authority and power to raise the whole number of the forces of his dominion if he pleases. The power of God hath more objects than his decree hath, but since it is his perfection to be immutable and not to change his decree, he cannot morally put forth his power upon all those objects which, as it is essentially in him, he hath ability to do. God hath decreed to save those that believe in Christ, and to judge unbelievers to everlasting perdition. He cannot morally damn the first, or save the latter, yet he hath not divested himself of his absolute power to save all or damn all. Or suppose God hath decreed not to create more worlds than this we are now in. Doth his decree weaken his strength to create it more, if he please? His not creating more is not a want of strength, but a want of will. It is an act of liberty, not an act of impotency. As when a man solemnly resolves not to walk in such a way, or come at such a place, his resolution deprives him not of his natural strength to walk thither, but fortifies his will against using his strength in any such motion to that place. The will of God has set bounds to the exercise of his power, but doth not infringe that absolute power which still resides in his nature. He is girded about with more power than he puts forth, in Psalm 65, verse 6. 4. As the power of God is infinite in regard to his essence, in regard of the objects, in regard of action, So fourthly, in regard of duration, the apostle calls it an eternal power in Romans 1:20. His eternal power is collected and concluded from the things that are made. They must needs be the products of some being which contains truly in itself all power, who wrought them without engines, without instruments. And therefore this power must be infinite and possessed of an unalterable virtue of acting. If it be eternal, it must be infinite, and hath neither beginning nor end. What is eternal hath no bounds. If it be eternal, and not limited by time, it must be infinite, and not to be restrained by any finite object. His power never began to be, nor ever ceased to be. It cannot languish. Men are fain to unbend themselves, and must have some time to recruit their tired spirits. But the power of God is perpetually vigorous, without any interrupting qualm, as Isaiah 40:28. Hast thou not known, hast thou not heard, that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? That might which suffered no diminution from eternity, but hatched so great a world by brooding upon nothing, will not suffer any dimness or decrease to eternity. This power, being the same with his essence, is as durable as his essence, and rides forever in his nature. 8. The eighth consideration for the right understanding of this attribute, the impossibility of God's doing some things, is no infringing of his almightiness, but rather a strengthening of it. It is granted that some things God cannot do, or rather, as Aquinas and others, it is better to say such things cannot be done than to say that God cannot do them, to remove all kind of imputation or reflection of weakness on God. And because the reason of the impossibility of those things is in the nature of the things themselves. 1. Some things are impossible in their own nature. Such are all those things which imply a contradiction. As for thing to be, and not to be at the same time, for the sun to shine, and not to shine at the same moment of time, for a creature to act, and not to act at the same instance. One of those parts must be false, for if it be true that the sun shines this moment, it must be false to say that it does not shine. So it is impossible that a rational creature can be without reason. 'Tis a contradiction to be a rational creature, and yet want that which is essential to a rational creature. So it is impossible that the will of man can be compelled, because liberty is the essence of the will. While it is will, it cannot be constrained, and if it be constrained, it ceases to be will. God cannot at one time act as the author of the will and the destroyer of the will. It is impossible that vice and virtue, light and darkness, life and death, should be the same thing. Those things admit not of a conception in any understanding. Some things are impossible to be done because of the incapability of the subject. As for a creature to be made infinite, independent, to preserve itself without divine concourse and assistance, so a brute cannot be taken into communion with God and to everlasting spiritual blessedness, because the nature of a brute is incapable of such an elevation. A rational creature only can understand and relish spiritual delights, and is capable to enjoy God and have communion with him. Indeed, God can change the nature of a brute and bestow such faculties of understanding and will upon it as to render it capable of such a blessedness, though then it is no more a brute, but a rational creature. But while it remains a brute, The excellency of the nature of God does not admit of communion with such a subject, so that this is not for want of power in God, but because of a deficiency in the creature. To suppose that God could make a contradiction true is to make himself false, and to do just nothing. 2. Some things are impossible to the nature and being of God. As to die implies a flat repugnance to the nature of God. To be able to die is to be able to be cashiered out of being. If God were able to deprive himself of life, he might then cease to be. He were not then a necessary, but an uncertain, contingent being, and could not be said only to have immortality, as he is in 1 Timothy 6:16. He cannot die, who is life itself, and necessarily exists. He cannot grow old or decay, because he cannot be measured by time, and this is no part of weakness, but the perfection of power. His power is that whereby he remains forever fixed in his own everlasting being. That cannot be reckoned as necessary to the omnipotence of God, which all mankind count the part of weakness in themselves. God is omnipotent, because he is not impotent. And if he could die, he would be impotent, not omnipotent. Death is a feebleness of nature. It is undoubtedly the greatest impotence to cease to be. Who would count it a part of omnipotency to disenable himself and sink into nothing and not being? The impossibility for God to die is not a fit article to impeach his omnipotence. This would be a strange way of arguing. A thing is not powerful because it is not feeble, and cannot cease to be powerful, for death is a cessation of all power. God is almighty in doing what he will, not in suffering what he will not. To die is not an active but a passive power, a defect of a power. God is of too noble a nature to perish. Some things are impossible to the eminency of nature which he hath above all creatures. As to walk, sleep, feed, these are imperfections belong to bodies and compounded natures. If he could walk, he were not everywhere present. Motion speaks succession. If he could increase, he would not have been perfect before. 3. Some things are impossible to the glorious perfections of God. God cannot do anything unbecoming his holiness and goodness, anything unworthy of himself, and against the perfections of his nature. God can do whatsoever he can will, as he doth actually do whatsoever he doth actually will, so it is possible for him to do whatsoever it is possible for him to will. He doth whatsoever he will, and can do whatsoever he can will, but he cannot do what he cannot will. He cannot will any unrighteous thing, and therefore cannot do any unrighteous thing. God cannot love sin. This is contrary to his holiness. He cannot violate his word. This is a denial of his truth. He cannot punish an innocent. This is contrary to his goodness. He cannot cherish an impenitent sinner. This is an injury to his justice. He cannot forget what is done in the world. This is a disgrace to his omniscience. He cannot deceive his creature. This is contrary to his faithfulness. None of these things can be done by him because of the perfection of his nature. Would it not be an imperfection in God to absolve the guilty and condemn the innocent? It is congruous to the righteous and holy nature of God to command murder and adultery, to command men not to worship him, but to be base and unthankful. These things would be against the rules of righteousness, as when we say of a good man, he cannot rob or fight a duel. We do not mean that he wants a courage for such an act, or that he hath not a natural strength and knowledge to manage his weapons as well as another, but he hath a righteous principle strong in him, which will not suffer him to do it. His will is settled against it. No power can pass into act unless applied by the will. But the will of God cannot do, will do anything but what is worthy of him and decent for his goodness. 1. The scripture saith, it is impossible for God to lie, in Hebrews 6:18. And God cannot deny himself because of his faithfulness. 2 Timothy 2:13. As he cannot die, because he is life itself, as he cannot deceive, because he is goodness himself, as he cannot do an unwise action, because he is wisdom itself, so he cannot speak a false word, because he is truth itself. If he should speak anything as true, and not know it, where is his infinite knowledge and comprehensiveness of understanding? If he should speak anything as true, which he knows to be false, where is his infinite righteousness? If he should deceive any creature, there is an end of his perfection of fidelity and veracity. If he should be deceived himself, there is an end of his omniscience. We must then fancy him to be a deceitful God, an ignorant God, that is, no God at all. If he should lie, he would be God and no God, God upon supposition and no God because not the first truth. All unrighteousness is weakness, not power. It is a defection from right reason, a deviation from moral principles, and a rule of perfect action, and arises from a defect of goodness and power. It is a weakness, and not an omnipotence, to lose goodness. God is light. It is a perfection of light not to become darkness, and a want of power in light if it should become darkness. His power is infinitely strong. So is his wisdom infinitely clear, and his will infinitely pure. Would it not be a part of weakness to have a disorder in himself, and these perfections shock one against another? Since all perfections are in God, in the most sovereign height of perfection, nothing can be done but the infiniteness of one against the infiniteness of the other. He would then be unstable in his own perfections and depart from the infinite rectitude of his own will if he should do an evil action. Again, what is an argument of greater strength than to be utterly ignorant of infirmity? God is omnipotent because he cannot do evil and would not be omnipotent if he could. These things would be marks of weakness and not characters of majesty. Would you count a sweet fountain impotent because it cannot send forth bitter streams, or the sun weak because it cannot diffuse darkness as well as light in the air? There is an inability arising from weakness and an inability arising from perfection. It is the perfection of angels and blessed spirits that they cannot sin. And it would be the imperfection of God if he could do evil. Hence follows that it is impossible that a thing past should not be past. If we ascribe a power to God to make a thing that is past not to be past, we do not truly ascribe power to him, but a weakness. For it is to make God to lie, as though God might not have created man, yet after he had created Adam, though he should presently have reduced Adam to his first nothing, yet it would be forever true that Adam was created, and it would be forever be false that Adam never was created. So though God may prevent sin, yet when sin hath been committed, it will always be true that that sin was committed. It will never be true to say such creature that did sin, did not sin. His sin cannot be recalled, though God by pardon take off the guilt of Peter's denying our Saviour, yet it will be eternally true that Peter did deny him. It is repugnant to the righteousness and truth of God to make that which was once true to become false and not true. That is, to make a truth to become a lie, and a lie to become a truth. This is well argued from Hebrews 6:18. It is impossible for God to lie. The apostle argues that what God has promised and sworn will come to pass. And cannot that come to pass? Now, if God can make a thing past not to be passed, this consequence would not be good, for then he might make himself not to have promised, not to have sworn, after he had promised and sworn, and so if there were a power to undo that which is past, there would be no foundation for faith, no certainty of revelation. It cannot be asserted that God hath created the world, that God has sent his Son to die, that God has accepted his death for man. These things might not be true, if it were possible that that which hath been done might be said never to have been done. So that what any may imagine to be a want of power in God is the highest perfection of God, and that the greatest security to a believing creature that hath to do with God. 4. Some things are impossible to be done because of God's ordination. Some things are impossible, not in their own nature, but in regard of the determined will of God. So God might have just destroyed the world after Adam's fall, but it was impossible. Not that God wanted power to do it, but because he did not only decree from eternity to create the world, but also decree to redeem the world by Jesus Christ, and erected the world in order to the manifestation of his glory in Christ. Ephesians 1:4-5. The choice of some in Christ was before the foundation of the world. Supposing that there was no hindrance in the justice of God to pardon the sin of Adam after his fall, and to execute no punishment on him, yet in regard of God's threatening that in the day he eat of the forbidden fruit he should die, it was impossible. So, though it was possible that the cup should pass from our blessed Saviour, that is, possible in its own nature, yet it is not possible in regard of the determination of God's will, since he had both decreed and published his will to redeem man by the passion and blood of his Son. These things God, by his absolute power, might have done, but upon account of his decree, they were impossible, because it is repugnant to the nature of God to be mutable. It is to deny his own wisdom which contrived them, and his own will which resolved them, not to do that which he had decreed to do. This would be a diffidence in his wisdom, and a change of his will. The impossibility of them is no result of a want of power, no mark of an imperfection of feebleness and impotence, but the perfection of immutability and unchangeableness. Thus have I endeavoured to give you a right notion of this excellent attribute of the power of God, in as plain terms as I could, which may serve us for a matter of meditation, admiration, fear of him, trust in him, which are the proper uses we should make of this doctrine of divine power. The want of a right understanding of this doctrine of the divine power have caused many to run in mighty absurdities. I have therefore taken the more pains to explain it. 2. The second thing I proposed is the reasons to prove God to be omnipotent. The scripture describes God by this attribute of power in Psalm 115:3. He hath done whatsoever he pleased. It sometimes set forth his power in a way of derision of those that seem to doubt it. When Sarah doubted it of his ability to give her a child in her old age, in Genesis 18:14, Is anything too hard for the Lord? They deserve to be scoffed that will despoil God of his strength and measure him by their shallow models. And when Moses uttered something of unbelief of this attribute, as if God were not able to feed 600,000 Israelites besides women and children, which he aggravates by a kind of imperious scoff, shall the flocks and the herds be slain for them to suffice them? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them? As in Numbers 11:22, God takes him up short. Verse 23. Is the Lord's hands waxed short? What? Can any weakness seize upon my hand? Can I draw out of my own treasures what is needful for a supply? The hand of God is not at one time strong, and at another time feeble. Hence it is that we read of the hand and arm of God, an outstretched arm, because the strength of a man is exerted by his hand and arm. The power of God is called the arm of his power, and the right hand of his strength. Sometimes, according to the different manifestations of it, it is expressed by finger, when a less power is evinced, by hand, when something greater, by arm, when more mighty than the former. Since God is eternal, without limits of time, he is also almighty without limits of strength. As he cannot be said to be more in being now than he was before, so he is neither more nor less in strength than he was before. As he cannot cease to be so, so he cannot cease to be powerful, because he is eternal. His eternity and power are linked together as equally demonstrable as in Romans 1:20. God is called the God of gods, Elohim, in Daniel 11:36. The mighty of mighties, whence all mighty persons have their activity and vigor. He's called the Lord of hosts, as being the creator and conductor of the heavenly militia. Reason 1. The power that is in creatures demonstrates a greater and inconceivable power in God. Nothing in the world is without a power of activity according to its nature. No creature can act something. The sun warms and enlightens everything. It sends its influences upon the earth, into the bowels of the earth, into the depths of the sea. All generations owe themselves to its instrumental virtue. How powerful is a small seed to rise into a mighty tree when a lofty top, and extensive branches, and send forth other seeds which can still multiply into numberless plants. How wonderful is the power of the Creator, who hath endowed so small a creature as a seed with so fruitful an activity. Yet this is but the virtue of a limited nature. God is both the producing and preserving cause of all the virtue in any creature, in every creature. The power of every creature belongs to him as a fountain, and is truly his power in the creature. As he is the first being, he is the original of all being. As he is the first good, he is the spring of all goodness. As he is the first truth, he is the source of all truth. So as he is the first power, he is the fountain of all power. 1. He therefore that communicates to the creature what power it hath, contains eminently much more power in himself, as in Psalm 94 verse 10. He that teaches man knowledge, shall not he know? So he that gives created beings power, shall he not be powerful? The first being must have as much power as he hath given to others. He could not transfer that upon another which he did not transcendently possess himself. The sole cause of created power cannot be destitute of any power in himself. We see that the power of one creature transcends the power of another. Beasts can do the things that plants cannot do. Besides the power of growth, they have a power of sense and progressive motion. Men can do more than beasts. They have rational souls to measure the earth and heavens, and to be repositories of multitudes of things, notions, and conclusions. We may well imagine angels to be far superior to man. The power of the Creator must far surmount the power of the creature, and must needs be infinite. For if it be limited, it is limited by himself or by some other, or if by some other, he is no longer a creator, but a creature. For that which limits him in his nature did communicate that nature to him. Not by himself, for he would not deny himself any necessary perfection. We must still conclude a reserve of power in him, that he that made these can make many more of the same kind. 2. All the power which is distinct in the creatures must be united in God. One creature hath a strength to do this, another to do that. Every creature is as a system filled with a particular and limited power, according to the capacity of its nature, from this fountain. All are distinct streams from God. But the strength of every creature, though distinct in the rank of creatures, is united in God, the centre, whence those lines were drawn, the fountain whence those streams were derived. If the power of one creature be admirable, as the power of an angel, which the psalmist says in Psalm 103:20, excelleth in strength, how much greater must the power of a legion of angels be? How inconceivably superior the power of all those numbers of spiritual natures, which are the excellent works of God. Now, if all this particular power, which is in every angel distinct, were compacted in one angel, how would it exceed our understanding and be above our power to form a distinct conception of it? What is thus divided in every angel must be thought united in the creator of angels, and far more excellent in him. Everything is in a more noble manner in the fountain than in the streams which distill and descend from it. He that is the original of all those distinct powers must be the seat of all power without distinction. In him is the union of all without division. What is in them as a quality is in him as his essence. Again, if all the powers of several creatures, with all their principal qualities and virtues, both of beasts, plants, and rational creatures, were limited in one subject, as if one lion had the strength of all the lions that ever were, or if one elephant had the strength of all the elephants that ever were, nay, if one bee had all the power of motion and stinging that all bees ever had, it would have a vast strength. But if the strength of all those thus gathered into one of every kind should be lodged in one sole creature, one man, would it not be a strength too big for our conception? Or suppose one cannon had all the force of all the cannons ever were in the world. What a battery would it make, and as it were shake the whole frame of heaven and earth? All his strength must be much more incomprehensible in God. All is united in him. If it were in one individual created nature, it would still be a finite power in a finite nature. But in God, it is infinite and immense. Reason 2. If there were not an incomprehensible power in God, he would not be infinitely perfect. God is the first being. It can only be said of him, est, he is, as other things are nothing to him, less than nothing and vanity, Isaiah 40:17, and reputed as nothing, Daniel 4:35. All the inhabitants of the earth, with all their wit and strength, are counted as if they were not, just in comparison with him and his being, as a little mote in the sunbeams, God, therefore, is a pure being. Any kind of weakness whatsoever is a defect, a decree of not being. So far as anything wants this or that power, it may be said not to be. Were there anything of weakness in God, any want of strength which belonged to the perfection of a nature, it might be said of God, he is not this or that. He wants this or that perfection of being. And so he would not be a pure being. There would be something of not being in him. But God, being the first being, the only original being, he is infinitely distant from not being, and therefore infinitely distant from anything of weakness. Again, if God can know whatsoever is possible to be done by him, and cannot do it, there would be something more in his knowledge than in his power. What would then follow?